Online Tonight is live and on the air at 1-800-39-ONLINE. 1-800-396-6546.
Online Tonight.
I like the way this man thinks.
Now, from the craziest city on the planet, this is Online Tonight, on the air toll-free at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. And now, the host of Online Tonight, Max.
Welcome, I'm Max. Welcome to Online Tonight, where we talk about the latest in tech and pop culture, plus random thoughts about the things that I think are cool and nerdy or geeky. We also answer your tech questions. Give us a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. You can also send us a text or an email. Our text is 951-395-1017. Again, 951-395-1017. And you can email show@onlinetonight.com, show@onlinetonight.com.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Hey, it's not Ryan Reynolds. Mint Mobile is cheaper than those big carriers. So you don't have to buy your socks from the thrift store. Ew. And it must be good, because Ryan's mom was in a commercial. Go get something good at OLTTV.com/mint. That's OLTTV.com/mint. I don't have to spell mint, right?
All right. 1-800-39-ONLINE is our toll-free telephone number. Victoria is there taking your calls, going through your text and your emails. Just a quick reminder that if you send us a text or an email, it's one way. You may never hear back from us. We may or may not read your text or email here on the air. So if you want to get an immediate answer, then give us a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE. Let's start with some Apple news. The U.S. Department of Justice has filed an antitrust lawsuit against Apple. They are saying that Apple maintains a monopoly in the smartphone space because of the integration of iPhone and iCloud and the App Store and messages, all these things, you know, the whole ecosystem, which some people think is what makes Apple great. But the government has a different opinion. Apple has responded by saying they deny all of these allegations and they are going to defend themselves in court or wherever they have to defend themselves. Considers the lawsuit to be a threat to innovation and competitive markets. Here's a little bit more about the lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court of New Jersey. The DOJ and 16 other state attorney generals have joined in. The accusations include violations of federal and state antitrust laws. One of the things the DOJ is arguing is that Apple has been blocking innovative super apps. I'm not really sure how the government is defining that, but it'll be interesting to see. They are suppressing mobile cloud streaming services, excluding cross-platform messaging apps, and diminishing non-Apple smartwatch functionality. They also have an issue with digital wallets. You can only use Apple's digital wallet on the platform. And the government is saying that it should be open to anybody who wants to offer a digital wallet. All right. Moving on, a little bit of news from Epic. Epic in Europe is complaining about the fees. So just a quick background. There's this act or this law that came into effect last month or this month from the European Union. And they said that Apple has to open up their stores and some of their infrastructure to allow people like Epic and other companies to jump in and be able to offer their own marketplace, not have to deal with Apple's 30% commission and things like that. So that's what that's about. And as part of that, Apple said, okay, we're going to allow you to create these other markets. However, things still have to be approved by Apple. And so there's a fee associated with that. And so both Meta, well, not both, Meta, Microsoft, X, and apparently Match.com, the dating app, have joined Epic Games in the protest. They have concerns over Apple's compliance with court ruling for anti-steering rules. They criticize Apple's high fees and restrictions on developer website links. Apple still wants money for allowing people onto their platform. This is a horrible metaphor, but I'm going to give it anyway. So Apple has been offering a taxi service for a really long time. They sell the cars and stuff like that. But developers feel that they should have free access to the back seat and not have to pay any kind of toll or fee for traveling or having their items stored on that device. That was a horrible metaphor. Forget that. Pretend I didn't say it. Apple states that there are plans. Epic, Microsoft, etc. are saying that Apple's plan with these fees doesn't align with what the court in the EU intended. And so back in 2021, Epic filed a lawsuit, and they are saying that these guidelines are not aligned with the order that came into effect. Apple's implementation renders links commercially unusable due to the fees and restrictions. Now, Apple has already been kind of hit from developers who give away a free app, as an example, even if it's through the App Store or through these third-party marketplaces, because Apple has said that if you hit a certain threshold of number of downloads or the number of active users, that you're going to have to pay a certain amount. Well, then that's really not free, because then the developer has to pay the toll, so to speak. And so Apple is reevaluating that to see if that's something that they can fix. Just real quick, while we still have a few moments, I wanted to share with you that Apple has released 17.4.1 update. It is a minor update for iOS 17 and iPad OS 17 following the release of 17.4 and iOS and iPad OS a few weeks ago. You can get the update already on eligible iPhones and iPads via Settings General Software Update. Also, iOS 16 users may be receiving a 16.7.7 security update. Now, the interesting part about this is that there's no real documentation or anything that says, you know, what's included in these updates. And this has been a question or a problem for some time. However, there is some good news. This one was definitely clear. And that is iPad users who are having problems scanning QR codes with the camera. Well, apparently iPad OS 17.4.1 addresses that. So if you are affected by the QR bug in certain iPad models, then you should have a fix now. The bug impacted mostly 6th generation iPads, 7th generation iPads, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, and 2nd generation 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Apple advises affected users to update right away to iPad OS 17.4.1 to resolve the problem. There had been a lot of discussion on Apple forums and places like that saying this was, you know, a problem. Again, Apple's release notes didn't specifically mention that the bug was fixed, but people who had installed the patch and then did some testing found out that that is the case. And the only real mention from the update, of course, was that it had unspecified bug fixes and security improvements. Some of us in the market that rely on a lot of Apple stuff wish they would give us a little bit more information on what is included or excluded or fixed in some of these releases, because sometimes they will mess you up, kind of like what happened with Sonoma. There was an update recently on Sonoma, and it broke the hubs that you would plug in. And it was also deleting files from your iCloud account. So it's not always best to update right away. Sometimes it's nice to try to find out what's kind of going on. More Apple updates. Vision OS, if you have one of those Apple Vision Pros, you can now get a new update called 1.1.1 of the operating system. It comes 2 weeks after 1.1 was given out. And again, not a lot of information about what's fixed, But there you go. Something I found very interesting is you can now browse Vision Pro apps on the web. So if you head over to the Mac Rumors website and check out their Vision OS App Store web, it'll send you over to the App Store, Vision OS App Store on the web, and you can see all the wonderful apps and stuff that are available now for your Vision Pro. Don't forget to head over to onlinetonight.com where you can check out all of our show notes and our podcasts and all that stuff. It's Online Tonight. Stay tuned. This hour's Geek Speak is CMS. We'll get back to that in just a minute. This Geek Speak is brought to you by Anchor. I've used other Anchor products, but I didn't realize they are the world's number one mobile charging brand with over 200 million products sold worldwide. They've been a pioneer in charging technology for over 10 years. I'm very interested in the Powerhouse 767. You want to think of it as a giant battery-operated generator. It has 13 charging ports and outlets. It's great for RVs, outdoor recreation, and home backup. Find all the amazing Anchor products at OLTTV.com/anchor. That's OLTTV.com/ANKER. Now, CMS. CMS stands for Content Management System. A CMS is a software tool that allows you to create, edit, and publish content. While early CMS software was used to manage documents and local computer files, most CMS systems are now designed exclusively to manage content on the web or on the internet. The goal of a CMS is to provide an intuitive user interface for building and modifying web page content. Each CMS also provides a web publishing tool that allows one or more users to publish updates via the web. So think of it like a post. You can have different authors. If you have a, you know, like a magazine, something's written by Fred, something's written by Emma, they can get in there and they can create their own articles. The editing component is called the content management application, while the publishing tool is called the content delivery application. These two components are integrated together in the CMS to streamline the web development process. One of the most common contact management systems out there is WordPress. But of course, there are others like Blogger, Wix, and Drupal. That is this hour's Geek Speak.
Online Tonight. Where beauty is only a dimmer switch away, this is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
All right, we have a listener question from Mike in Manhattan. He emailed me and said, "Yo, Max." Yeah, that's me. "I read something in the New York Times about this creepy-sounding setting on my iPhone, discoverable by others. What does this mean, and should I be worried about... let me try that again. What does this mean, and should I be worried that it's automatically enabled on my phone by the new Journal app?" All right. So a quick aside. If you're ever concerned about a feature, like not too long ago, your contacts could be given via AirDrop. You might turn that off. Let me just explain a little bit about what the feature is. So Apple's Journal app launched in December. It was part of the 17 release. And it is really designed to try to encourage you to document your daily life in a way. Think of it as a diary, or hence the name Journal. And it prompts you. What makes it different from, you know, just going home at the end of the day and pulling out your little book is there are prompts. It will ask you questions, and it will say, "Hey, I see that you're, you know, you finished the gym," and there's a lot of things that have to be turned on for these things to work, like location services and some of these other things. But you might be interested to, you know, turn some of these features on so that you get these little prompts to take a few moments to journal your activity. Now, one of these features is when you have that setting turned on, the discoverable by others turned on, what it's actually saying is that you can find out about some of the people that are with you. Here's an example. Let's say that Victoria and I go to a Starbucks, or we go to a new restaurant, and one of my friends is there, and they come by the table just to say hi or whatever. I might later on get a message from the journal app that says, I see that you and Victoria and Mike were at this restaurant. Would you like to journal about it? Well, how did it know that Mike was there? Well, because the journal app has this ability to look around to see what iPhones are around. And if Mike is in my contact list, it'll name him. But if it's a stranger, then it kind of ignores it. It doesn't store any of that information. It's simply using it as a way to prompt you, to encourage you to make a journal entry. And some people like the feature and some people don't like the feature. Again, it's not sharing your contact information. You're not getting somebody's email. You're not getting somebody's phone number. You're simply getting a name if they're in your contact. If they're not in your contact, it just shows up as a stranger. So if you're concerned about it, then by all means, turn it off. But if you like the idea of getting information from your contacts that were in the area, and you're in a new place, you might say, hey, this is something that I'm interested in, and you can leave it on. So it allows iPhone users with the Journal app to detect nearby devices via Bluetooth. It enables data sharing for better suggestions, but it has raised some privacy concerns. Apple has stated that it does not store that information about others in the area. It is just used to prompt you. Again, if you're worried about it, Mike, then you, that's funny. Then you might want to, turn it off. There's no reason. I personally don't use a lot of journaling. I'm using this, patent pending technology that I'm testing to, that does something similar, but in a kind of a different way. And so I'm not using Apple's journaling information. If you want to turn it off, you can go into settings, privacy and security, journaling suggestions, and then you want to turn the discoverable by others and make sure that the slider is gray. And that will turn that off for you. And more technology news, if you are a watcher of YouTube, then you might be excited to hear that they now have multi-view support on the phone, iPhones and iPads. So they have updated the app, and now you can simultaneously watch four cable channels simultaneously. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, if it's a sport thing, you know, you might want to do it, or you're trying to have the view in one corner and maybe Fox News in another corner, or, you know, watching that LA Chase on Channel 11 in another corner. Now you can do that. So you can watch four cable channels simultaneously. Now, it is available from the Home tab with options like Top Picks for You or Watch and Multiview. Now, initially, it's limited to sports events, but they're going to extend it on after that. You know, I don't like to watch a bunch of sports at the same time, but you can check it out. Now, you must be a subscriber, and you must update to the 8.11 version or later of YouTube TV on your iPhone or iPad. And, of course, there are some restrictions and, you know, only pre-selected games, if it's sports related, are going to be allowed. And don't forget, you know, you've got to have a subscription, which is like $75 a month or whatever. And there are other packages available for an additional $50. You get NBA. Hey, tell me, let me know, do you use YouTube TV for these types of things? And if so, what do you use it for? Give me a ring. 1-800-39-ONLINE. It's online tonight. Stay tuned.
taking your calls right now at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546.
Online tonight.
Somebody, please, tell me what that is, please.
Where the quality of our answers just might surprise you. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
Thank you, Victoria. Yes, thank you so much for including me in your week. Greatly appreciate it. 24 minutes before the hour, my name is Max, and the name of the show is Online Tonight. You can give us a call toll-free at 1-800-39-ONLINE. 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. You can also send us a text and email. I'll give you that in just a moment.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Hey, it's not Ryan Reynolds. Mint Mobile is cheaper than those big carriers. So you don't have to buy your socks from the thrift store. Ew. And it must be good, because Ryan's mom was in a commercial. Go get something good at OLTTV.com/mint. That's OLTTV.com/mint. I don't have to spell mint right.
All right, I promised you the text and the email. The text is 951-395-1017, 951-395-1017, and you can email show@onlinetonight.com. That's S-H-O-W, show@onlinetonight.com. Some video game news. Qualcomm chips will run Windows games just fine, according to Tom's Hardware. I actually have a little challenge with this article, and I'll share that with you in just a minute. But apparently, Qualcomm's X Elite ARM CPU it has been targeted to run the ARM version of Windows, and Qualcomm's very happy about the performance of their x86 emulator that will be included. And they're saying that, you know, you're going to get a good experience. Now, of course, you're going to get a better experience if the game is native ARM 64, that's going to give you the absolute best performance. But the games are good enough, I guess, according to Qualcomm, using the X64 emulation. The article at Tom says that Apple doesn't have this ability. Well, that's not true. Apple has Rosetta on the M1 series, M2 series, and M3 series, allowing you to run Intel-based apps. So it's, you know, the way they positioned it made it sound like Apple doesn't offer it. Apple has offered emulation going all the way back to the days when we had moved from the PowerPC to the Intel chip. We had Rosetta back then that would convert PowerPC code into Intel code so that it would run on Mac OS X on the new Intel hardware. And Apple, when they migrated from Intel to their own ARM-based chips, they offered the same kind of service. So it's been around for quite some time, but let's get back to Qualcomm's announcement. They're very excited. They assured the CDC attendees, and I guess that's some kind of gaming developer conference or something. I wasn't there this year, so I'm not really sure. They said that Qualcomm is excited to let you know that the graphics code's going to work. They highlighted their hardware's readiness for x86 emulation and gaming at the GDC. And so that's very exciting for them. Now, Qualcomm's Snapdragon X Elite chips running x86 software could really kind of change the Windows gaming market. Again, they're still encouraging developers to support ARM native, and that would be, of course, the best solution. But they, they're doing what they can to show that it's not necessary. The Snapdragon X Elite chips reportedly show graphics performance comparable to AMD's top-end mobile Radeon 780M iGPU, and they also claim that it has better CPU performance. So we'll have to see about that. A lack of compatibility with anti-cheat software is a significant issue. Some PC games require manual porting work for ARM compatibility, though most of the titles work without having to be tweaked. All of that information was brought to you at the Game Developer Conference. Qualcomm also says that the X Elite laptops reportedly perform well in games like Control, Baldur's Gate 3 and Redout 2. And they, again, were comparing their performance to the Radeon 780. If you are a Pokemon fan, then you probably are already aware of this site, but it was recently just taken down. It was called Relic Castle, and it was a popular Pokemon fan website, and it has shut down after nearly 10 years. Apparently, they received a DMCA and were asked to take down certain things from their website. Now, considering that most of their website was focused on that particular thing, they didn't really have anything left to offer. So they decided to take it down. Relic Castle served as a forum for Pokemon fans to discuss and share fan-made Pokemon games. They allowed links to fan-made games rather than hosting them directly. So they were still given a takedown notice. Details of the notice were not made public. So Relic decided not to just publish the takedown notice like some other sites have had, but it probably has a lot to do with, you know, some of the games and stuff that fans were creating. Uncertain if the notice came directly from the Pokemon company or not. We're not sure who kind of initiated the action, but they do acknowledge, Relic Castle does acknowledge, that the closure is due to the DMCA notice. They describe the website's community achievements, and it regrets the fact that it has to close. And again, no one's really sure who issued the DMCA, but Relic expresses gratitude for its users for over the years, and they really appreciate all of the camaraderie and all the other things that the website was able to offer everybody. And you know, how it's going to impact the community is unknown, and we'll just have to stick around to find out. Apparently, there was a game called, Undawn's Failure. Undawn, a zombie survival video game, which had been endorsed by Will Smith, has crashed and burned, basically. Let's just put it that way. It was developed in-house by Tencent, and it had reportedly a budget of over $130 million, maybe $140 million, and had 300 developers working on it. It was launched in June for PC and mobile platforms. Now, Will Smith was primarily used to generate hype. The actor's portrayal as Trey Jones, a guide character in the game, and how much he was paid, etc. That stuff is not available, but despite the high expectations, Undawn generated just under $300,000 in revenue last month, and so it really failed to meet the publisher's expectations, and so they have decided that they're going to get rid of it. Now, they are shifting their focus away from casual party games and titles like Genshin Impact. They're going to kind of reevaluate and see where they want to go. They also canceled a mobile game based on Square Enix's Nier. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's N-I-E-R franchise. They had some monetization issues, and so they've canceled that. And they also were in development of Elden Ring. And they said that that's still ongoing, but it does face some hurdles. And so we'll have to see how that goes. Just in video game news, what are the top best 10 video games that are available right now on PC? Let's see if we can just run down this list real fast. At number 10, which came out almost 10 years ago, Rocket League, still on the list after 10 years. Number 10 of the best free PC games. Number 9, Counter-Strike 2. That just came out last year. So that's nice. That's number 9. Coming in at number 8, Genshin Impact. That came out in 2020. That's about 3-4 years old. And then coming in at number 7, Path of Exile. That's from 2013. That's over 10 years old. Nice that these titles are still popular. Again, these are the free the 10 best free games on PC right now. Coming in at number 6, Apex Legends from 2019. DOTA or Dota 2 from 2013. Coming in at number 4, Destiny 2 from 2017. Coming in at number 3, League of Legends from 2009. And coming in at number two, The Sims 4 from 2014, also an older title. Nice to see these. And the number one free best game for PC is still Fortnite, which came out in 2017, Battle Royale. Are you a big video game fan? If so, what are your top five video games? Drop me a note or give me a call, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. You can also send us a text or an email. Show at Online Tonight is the email address. It's Online Tonight. I'm Max. Stay tuned. Bookmark this. Our bookmark this for this hour is timeanddate.com. Let me switch mics. Hold on. All right, timeanddate.com. I hate when we have to change the clocks. It really throws me off. Every time we have to go forward or backward, it drives me completely crazy. This site will help you keep track of time and time zones across the U.S. and around the world. Because I have relatives in Arizona, as an example, and we don't even change the time over there. So it's weird. I also have relatives in Ireland, and I don't know if they change the clocks or not. So I head over to timeanddate.com where I can find out, you know, what's going on? What time is it here? What time is it there? Sometimes it's even a different day. So this site helps me keep track of what time it is there and whether they changed it or not. So head over to timeanddate.com. That's this hour's bookmark. This brought to you by Southwest Airlines. Southwest offers flights to over 100 destinations in 42 states, plus Puerto Rico, Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. Find out all the different destinations you could include in your next vacation at olttv.com/SWA. That's olttv.com/SWA.
Online Tonight.
Genetically modifying turkeys so they have five drumsticks. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
All right, switching back and forth between a couple different microphones today just to see what's happening. We got some level changes, but I appreciate that. Hopefully it sounds all right to you. Samsung will give you a free TV when you buy the new one that you really want. This is a promotion from Samsung. They're very excited about it. And what they're doing is they are offering a free 65-inch 4K TV with pre-orders of any of their 2024 TV models. So their 2024 TV lineup includes the Samsung, AI technology with the anti-glare OLED, the S95D, the Frame TV, and the 4K QLED, or QLED, depending on who you are. The S95D OLED features an anti-glare display. It has enhanced contrast and color intensity. It addresses common OLED panel issues. The S90D offers an updated AI processor and has a refresh rate of 144 hertz and improved 4K upscaling. The Frame TV now has a reduced power consumption. It used a lot of power. And it has a refresh rate that dips down now to 60 hertz. And, of course, they've got some 8K models. So if you're interested in the 8K models, those are the QN800D and the QN900D. Those come with AI upscaling and motion-enhancing features. Now, the details for the free offer is you get a free 65-inch TV. It's being offered by Samsung. It'll be the U690T, and that model's from 2020. It's equipped with crystal, ultra-high-def 4K, and has two HDMI ports. And it does it lacks local dimming for those of you who are interested in the brightness and some of those other things. If you want more information on the deal, you have to go to Samsung's website. It's samsung.com/US/TVs/2024-pre-order. Offer ends April 11th and will be available while supplies last. Now, how enticing is that really to you? I mean, are you going to get a free TV so that you can get one of the other TVs later? That doesn't match my buying patterns, but I'd be interested in finding out what you think. Samsung has kind of a smelly issue going on right now, according to some of the users on the internet. Samsung users are questioning why the S Pen on the Galaxy S24 Ultra emits a foul odor, and it kind of smells like burning plastic. Over at Reddit, and I've got some Reddit news for you later, a Reddit post titled, "Why Does My S Pen Smell Bad?" Garnered over 250 comments from users agreeing with the unpleasant smell. Users said the smell was like an electrical fire, burnt plastic, or that the new tech had a hint of burning. There's a soft rubber tip on the S Pen, and it's possibly identified as the source of the smell. Maybe it's just the type of rubber they used, or maybe it's off-gassing. I don't, you know, I'm not a chemist, so I don't know how all those things work. Some users are speculating that it could be some kind of thing to keep people from putting it in their mouth or something. Apparently, Nintendo cartridges have and batteries are now coated so that people will stop putting them in their mouth. I didn't really realize. I know, like, little kids with button batteries, they think sometimes they look like candy, and so they put it in there and it's got a bad taste. But I don't know very many people who put Switch cartridges in their mouth, but you never know. Apparently people found out that it tastes nasty because back in the old days, if you watch a lot of these old movies from like the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, you'll see somebody taking a note in their little notepad and they'll lick the tip of their pen. So apparently people still do that. And some of the comments said that it doesn't taste good. It's yucky. And so I guess people still lick their pens, even if it's a digital pen. Samsung user forum has said it had something to do with heat generated by the internal components while the pen is in the holster, and maybe that is causing some off-gassing or melting of something like that. So, you know, if it's something that you're concerned with or that you have noticed, you may not necessarily have to put the pen in the phone and see if that makes a difference. So despite the smell, however, the unit continues to work. And not everybody's experiencing the smell as overtly as others, and so you might check that out. Hey, don't forget that we have some new merch. Head over to olttv.com/store where you can check out the mugs, the Online Tonight shirts, the clocks, the tote bags, and of course my parody shirt from a very famous dinosaur movie is there. And each and every hour has the show notes and the podcast. You can listen to it right there on the website, or you can click the subscribe button. We greatly appreciate your support in that area as well. It's Online Tonight. Stay tuned.
Online Tonight is produced and copyrighted by Smart Family Media. All rights reserved. Host Maxwell Smart. Producer and other hats worn by Victoria Smart. Views and opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of the station, its management, affiliates, or other advertisers.
The
Looking around for the phone number, it's 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546.
Online tonight.
I don't know who's writing your material, but it's very VH1.
Now, from the craziest city on the planet, this is Online Tonight, on the air toll-free at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546. And now, the host of Online Tonight, Max.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for joining me. My name is Max. It is hour two. Greatly appreciate it. This is Online Tonight, where we talk about tech, pop culture, and the things that I think are geeky, whether it be 3D printing, or food, or theme parks, or whatever I'm in the mood for. But more importantly, I'd love to talk to you. Give me a call at 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. You can also send us a text or an email. The text is 951-395-1017. And you can also send an email to the show, and it's very simple, show@onlinetonight.com. That's S-H-O-W at onlinetonight.com. But of course, the best way to reach us is with our toll-free telephone number.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Hey, it's not Ryan Reynolds. Mint Mobile is cheaper than those big carriers, so you don't have to buy your socks from the thrift store. Ew. And it must be good, because Ryan's mom was in a commercial. Go get something good at OLTTV.com/mint. That's OLTTV.com/mint. I don't have to spell mint, right?
All right, Ms. Victoria is taking your calls and going through your texts and your emails. Now, remember that the best way is to call, because we don't respond to texts or emails, and you'll have to listen to all the hours of all the shows on multiple days to see if we got to your question. But if you want an immediate answer and we want to have a dialogue, then the toll-free telephone number, 1-800-39-ONLINE, is the absolute best way to reach us. I am surprised after all these years that the EPA, here's some tech news that we don't get into politics necessarily, but occasionally I'll see something in here that I find interesting. And something that I found interesting is the EPA. The EPA, which stands for the Environmental Protection Agency, at least here in the United States, has implemented a comprehensive ban on asbestos. Asbestos. I thought this was something they had done decades and decades ago. For those of you who don't know, asbestos is really bad, causes possibly cancer. And it's used in things that I didn't realize. I didn't realize that asbestos was in brake pads and possibly chlorine bleach and things like that. This is a final rule that marks a significant expansion of the EPA's rule from 2016 that is overhauling the regulation governing the toxic chemical. I always thought it was used in like insulation and things like that. So the ban targets... and I'm not a scientist, so I'm going to spell it C-H-R-Y-S-O-T-I-L-E, cryostyle asbestos, which is the only ongoing use of asbestos in the United States. It's found in products like gaskets and brake linings. The EPA administrator, Michael Regan, highlights that the ban was a major step to protect the public health, and linking it to Mr. Biden's Cancer Moonshot Initiative. Now, in 2016, the law was aimed to regulate tens of thousands of toxic chemicals, including asbestos, which was largely unregulated under federal law. Although asbestos was banned in 1989, a 1991 court decision weakened their authority, leading to the current rule, which came out in 2016. So the environmental groups like the Environmental Working Group commended the EPA's action, saying, you know, finally, the EPA is evaluating legacy uses of asbestos in older buildings to determine any possible health risks and if they're going to make people start pulling them out. a senator, I don't know where he's from, but Jeff Merkley, acknowledged progress but emphasizes the need for continued efforts to phase out other dangerous asbestos fibers and provide stronger health protections. So I know that I had a computer from a long, long time ago, and apparently it was used in a large factory or in a noisy environment or something, or a sensitive environment, and it actually had asbestos insulation inside of the PC case, which is partly why I grabbed this article, because I found it to be somewhat interesting. Microsoft is on the move when it comes to AI. We talked about Copilot and Copilot Pro recently. Microsoft has hired Mr. Suliman, a co-founder of DeepMind, and he will be heading the consumer AI division. Suliman will report directly to CEO, the Microsoft CEO, and lead efforts in AI development for Copilot Chatbox, Bing Search, and Edge Browser. He has a pretty extensive background, apparently. He previously led Inflection AI, which he co-founded with Reid Hoffman. They raised about $1.5 billion, apparently. I didn't realize it was that much, and I'm not sure if that's a typo, but that's a lot of money. Microsoft sees his hiring as a significant advantage in the AI race, especially against Google and possibly Apple in the future. Microsoft's investment in OpenAI further strengthens their AI capabilities. Despite advancements, Suliman emphasizes the need for responsible AI development. And he wrote a book called The Coming Wave, where he warns about AI's potential for disruption and being catastrophic if it's not managed correctly. So he is definitely in favor of its, you know, benefits, but he's also worried about, you know, misinformation and job displacement. That misinformation part, that concerns me. I'm always nervous about what the AI people are doing in the content management layer. We saw what Google had went through not too long ago with, you know, bias, and then they kind of got caught. So, but apparently, just back to Google for a second, is reportedly in talks with Apple for bringing to bring Gemini chatbot to iPhones and things like that. And apparently, Apple is also working with a Chinese AI company because China requires them to have AI services from a Chinese company to launch the service in China. So Apple is talking to everybody. It looks like Microsoft is probably doing the same kind of thing. And definitely Microsoft is buying all in to the AI space because they just unveiled the Surface Pro 10 for business and the Surface Laptop 6 for business. And it has a very large focus on AI integration and advanced features. Now, the device will feature Intel's latest Core Ultra processor. It will have Microsoft's Copilot and a natural processing unit built in for AI-powered features in Windows 11. It's designed exclusively for business customers. Both devices retain the previous model's external design, but all the internals have been improved. Microsoft would say vastly improved, but I haven't seen the specs yet. I know that it will offer the Core Ultra 5 135U and the Core Ultra 7 165U processors with up to 64 gigs of RAM, so that should be nice. Feature improvements include the display brightness and a better front-facing camera with 114-degree field of view and 1440p resolution. It will also include an NFC reader and may have a 5G option so that you can take it on the road with you and use your cellular instead of having to find a Wi-Fi hotspot. I don't know if prices have been announced yet, but I think they start at around $1,100 and they should be shipping sometime in first or second week of April. And then once the business ones come out, you know, then they start to make the consumer ones available. And that's always nice. I don't necessarily need all the bells and whistles from a business kind of device. It's nice occasionally to get, you know, something a little bit cheaper, maybe a little bit lighter, but I still like the power. So I'm going to do some research and check out the different CPUs and see how they stand up against some of the others. And I hope that the consumer ones don't have too dumbed down of a CPU on there. Feel free to give us a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is our toll-free telephone number. We'd love to hear from you. It's Online Tonight. I'm Max. Stay tuned. That's right. This is Geek Speak, where we take a tech term and turn it into plain English right before your very eyes or ears. This hour's Geek Speak is PHP. This portion of the show is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Your favorite shows, including Star Trek series, Transformer movies, plus the NCAA men's basketball, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Find out all they have to offer at OLTTV.com/stream. That's OLTTV.com/STREAM, stream. Now, PHP. PHP stands for PHP Hypertext Preprocessor. That's what's known as a recursive acronym. PHP is a scripting language web developers use to create dynamic websites. It's often installed by default on Apache web servers along with MySQL as part of a complete Linux configuration. When a website visitor accesses a PHP page, the web server processes or parses the PHP code, and it can output HTML to the web page, to you. It can dynamically add things like the date or anything, really. PHP scripts can range from a single line of commands to very complex functions. Some PHP-based websites generate nearly every single web page content dynamically, using a series of PHP scripts. Much of PHP syntax is similar to other languages like C++, Java, or Perl. However, PHP does contain some proprietary functions, including MySQL, specific methods for accessing records from a MySQL database. Plus, its integration with MySQL is great. It's constantly maintained. It's overall fairly easy to use. And PHP remains a popular choice for creating dynamic websites. That is this hour's Geek Speak.
This show looks just as good with or without your 3D glasses. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
All right, here's an email from Judy in Lubbock, Texas. She said, "Howdy, Max. I've been getting messages from Facebook that say I've requested a change to my password, but I haven't done such a thing. I keep thinking this is spam, like all those other messages that try to get you to, you know, log in using a bad link that steals your password. But then someone told me it could be that someone tried to get into my account and I should change my password. Do you have any more information about this? Thanks." I get a lot of spam. And I get spam from Facebook. I get spam from random stuff. I got one recently that said that it had recorded me using my camera and that I was doing something maybe inappropriate. First of all, I have tape over every single one of my cameras. And I never bring my camera into the bathroom or into my private boudoir. There's no way. So a lot of these are spam, but a lot of users are receiving these emails, and it looks like it's from a legitimate Facebook address, and it has the, you know, password recovery codes, and they didn't request them. So you might just dismiss it and say it's a scam, but you don't always want to do that. Some users have found that, yes, somebody is trying to gain access into their account. And so you kind of want to check. What you want to do is you want to look at the link that is provided. If it is a legitimate link, like mfacebook.com/login/recover, then you can you kind of can dive deeper and look in there and see and check whether it's your Facebook ID or not and see if it's correct. And then you can always copy the link and then go there yourself. Now, Facebook will only send you a password recovery code if it was requested. And suggesting that maybe somebody tried to put in your name or get access to your account. But there are other reasons. You know, somebody maybe typed something wrong, or maybe someone's trying to mess with you because they don't like you, or you posted something on your socials and they're just trying to be mean. But to safeguard your account, you should really change your password every once in a while. And you should use pretty complex passwords. You shouldn't use your date of birth, your anniversary, your dog's name with a number. You want to be creative, or depending on the type of computer you use, some of these have these really great random long passwords that they can store right into a little address book thing for you, so that you can use those without having to memorize them. And then, of course, you can always turn on two-factor authentication. And you may ask, what is that? When you try to log in, it will send a code to your phone, and it'll give you like a 6-digit number, and then you type that number in, and then it'll let you in. So that's a nice way to do it. So, Judy, think about those. If those are helpful, let me know. If you want more information, then just drop us another email. show@onlinetonight.com. Judy knows how to get to me. But if you would like to as well, then feel free to use that email address, show@onlinetonight.com. Let's jump into some vehicle news. Chrysler, which is owned by Fiat, I believe, is recalling approximately 286,000 vehicles due to a side airbag issue where the inflators might rupture, causing injury or death. The recall affects certain Dodge Chargers and Chrysler 300 vehicles, and these are any of the models between 2018 and 2021, and as well as any of the replacement parts that look like they have been put into over 1,000 vehicles. So the rupture of a side curtain airbag inflator could have sharp metal fragments, and they could strike you or hit you in the wrong spot and definitely cause some injury. And in some cases, you might not survive. The warning extends to recalled replacement parts. This is something I don't see very often, but apparently it's in the unit itself. And therefore, if you had one replaced, or maybe you had a little side impact and your car was rebuilt and they replaced, your side impact airbag, they may have replaced it with one of these defective items. Now, owners should have been notified by mail. You may get all the way up until May, and dealers will be replacing both side airbags free of charge. So that would be good. Another recall that I thought would be interesting, and I've seen this a little bit lately in our area. It was raining, and I was wondering, why are all these cars outside? Well, apparently 3.7 million cars on the road have been issued a park outside recall. 40% increase in cars with those recalls nationwide since May of last year. The number of cars with park outside recalls has nearly doubled in certain areas. GM is recalling over 800,000 pickup trucks over a tailgate issue with Hyundai and Kia, and Lincoln recalling over 3.3 million vehicles in September due to a fire risk. What they want you to avoid is putting your car in the garage, having it catch on fire, and burning down your house. That doesn't sound like a good thing. So, always keep track to see what recalls are available on your car. Feel free to give me a ring. I'm Max. It's Online Tonight. Stay tuned.
We're on the air live tonight, 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546 is the number.
Online tonight.
Okay, explain.
I can't. I don't know how he's doing it.
You're not going to do anything about that?
What am I going to do, huh? Broadcast her over the internet?
All right, thank you so much for joining me. Greatly appreciate it. 24 minutes before the hour, my name is Max. The name of the show is Online Tonight. Our toll-free telephone number is 1-800-39-ONLINE, 1-800-396-6546.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Hey, it's not Ryan Reynolds. Mint Mobile is cheaper than those big carriers. So you don't have to buy your socks from the thrift store. Ew. And it must be good, because Ryan's mom was in a commercial. Go get something good at OLTTV.com/mint. That's OLTTV.com/mint. I don't have to spell mint, right?
All right, phone lines are open. 1-800-39-ONLINE is our toll-free telephone number. You can also send us a text or an email. Our text is 951-395-1017. You can email show@onlinetonight.com. Now our quick review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
I'm Victoria. We got a chance to see an early screening of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, rated PG-13, which opened in theaters yesterday. This is a direct sequel to 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife, which is, of course, based on the Ghostbusters movies of the 80s. This one brings the Spengler family of new Ghostbusters to the iconic firehouse in New York and features the original cast a bit more. Winston's firm essentially bankrolls the Ghostbusters while developing new tech and studying the entities that they collect. An old nemesis returns in a new position of power and is, of course, out to get them again. There are a lot more connections to the original franchise in this sequel as all the Ghostbusters work together to fight an evil force that threatens a second ice age.
I'm Jennifer. Most of the cast of Ghostbusters Afterlife returns for this sequel, including Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, McKenna Grace, Finn Wolfhard, Celeste O'Connor, and Logan Kim. Of course, the original Ghostbusters cast is back. Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, and Annie Potts. New cast members include Kumail Nanjiani, Patton Oswalt, and Emily Allen Lind. And we have early tapes of my interviews with Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and Emily Allen Lind on the Fun Stuff page at smartmovieshow.com.
All right, I'm Max. The Miss Jennifer did not see Afterlife, and apparently it came out in 2021. I gave it a 5.25, so I had high expectations for this movie, though I should have probably watched Afterlife before I went to see this. That might have been a better idea. But it was nice to see them back in New York in the old firehouse instead of in the country. I don't even remember what it was. Oklahoma or Kansas or Ohio, Idaho, Tennessee. Could have been any of those places. I don't remember. Jen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't see the one before this, but I read a little bit of the synopsis, knew who the people were, and I didn't have any trouble following this at all. I felt like it was fine. It was similar. It was connected with the original, which I have seen. And so that is what was important. And I feel like it was, I feel like they explained enough of the backstory. People referenced, you know, that they were originally in Oklahoma or wherever. So I knew that from watching this movie. So I didn't feel that lost. It was its own, I feel like, fairly standalone adventure, but with the connections to the original. I like the characters. I don't know how McKenna Grace's character got through a whole movie not being yelled at for being a Ghostbuster, but then suddenly now she's in trouble for being a Ghostbuster, I guess because she's now in New York and the bad guy is here, and that's why. But overall, I thought it was fun. I like seeing the different ghosts. They're very well animated, and overall, I thought it was fun, and I thought it was good.
We'll come back for your rating. I don't remember Paul Rudd and the other ladies getting married, but apparently he was their teacher, science teacher, and then they got married. When did that happen?
In between the movies? maybe.
Why didn't they make that more clear?
I don't know. Maybe, I mean, are they?
Maybe they're not married.
They may not be married.
Then why'd you call him dad?
Because he acts as her dad. He is her father figure. I thought this movie was a lot of fun. I like that they're back in New York. It really connects it to the original movies. And it almost makes it feel like Afterlife was a blip, because it introduced sort of a separate location and a different element, you know, with the kids being, they were fish out of water because they had just moved to wherever it was, Oklahoma or whatever, because she inherited the house. And so it was an unfamiliar place, and they were trying to make friends and all that stuff. But then they are transported for this one back to New York, which means they're starting over again. But I'm not sure where they were from. So maybe they were from New York before they went to Oklahoma. I don't know. But it doesn't seem to matter, because everything just kind of falls into place. They're already up and running at the beginning of the movie. It's not like we see them, you know, dragging all their stuff from Oklahoma and unpacking. They're actually going out on calls in the ambulance, you know, Ghostbuster mobile and all this stuff. So it seems like they're already a well-oiled machine with their drones and their RC cars and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's already up and running. People are accepting them. It's not like the original Ghostbusters, where everybody thought they were crazy and didn't understand what they were doing. People in New York know, because this has been going on since the 80s, that there are ghosts that need to be busted. So it seems natural to have Ghostbusters, and they fit right in.
I'm sure they had ghosts in New York before the 80s. Yeah. I mean, that town is very old. It's a long time. So I'm sure that the people there probably, you know, have haunted hotel stories and stuff like that. I only have one criticism for this movie, and that is, it was great that it was back in New York, but I feel like they stole something from the very first Ghostbusters movie. And they didn't have to, because they could have maybe had a different place. The other thing that I just thought of now, because you thought of that, why did they move from Oklahoma to New York? And the reason is, they must have gotten rid of every single ghost in Oklahoma. So it is possible to completely exterminate all of the ghosts. And so I kind of appreciated the fact that, you know, they could go in and clean up every city individually and then just move on to the next one. So that's pretty neat. But then are there ghosts stored in Oklahoma? Did they have a containment facility there, or did they truck them all over to New York? Nobody knows. Nobody has told me this.
If we take it just based on what we saw in Afterlife,
that's what I'm saying.
Where did they keep them? The scenario was, they weren't actual Ghostbusters at the time. They busted some ghosts because of the situation with the...
They had traps.
Right.
The traps have to be empty.
But that's because...
Where'd they go?
The original Ghostbusters brought them.
Jen,
and now Winston
the final
has
words?
All the tech.
I enjoyed this a lot. I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
That's it?
Yeah.
All right. I gave Afterlife a 5.25. I'm going to give this a 5.25 as well. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually said, when sometimes at these press events, they will interview the press afterwards. And so I said in the lobby out loud, I said two things. I said, as good as the first one, and Ghostbusters means family. I don't think they can use that one, because that's kind of a Disney reference. Speaking of ghosts, a ghost that I like is from the 1980s, I believe, and apparently it's going to make a comeback, and I want to be very careful not to say it more than 3 times. You'll know what I mean in just a moment. Tim Burton's long-awaited sequel will be titled Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. The sequel catches up with Linda Dietz and her teenage daughter. She was the daughter in the original. That was played by Winona Ryder. She's going to return, and her daughter is going to be Jenna Ortega. They return to the Winter River, after their mom, Catherine O'Hara's character, passed away, they return. The teaser trailer hints at mysterious events surrounding a funeral and the young daughter's discovery of a miniature model in the attic of the Winter River home.
The trailer suggests that the return to the afterlife with Beetlejuice will be making a dramatic appearance. Very excited that it's coming back. It will be available around September 6th. And it also stars, of course, who you want it to star, which is Michael Keaton. He was the original Beetlejuice, and we definitely want to make sure that he is back, and he appeared in the trailer. So that's good news. I'm excited. What are you excited about movie-wise coming out this year? Give me a ring, 1-800-39-ONLINE. Stay tuned. Bookmark this. We try to give you something fun to look at each and every week. And don't forget, we put the links right up there on the website in the show notes. So hopefully you'll not have to write any of this down. This week, this hour's Bookmark This is almanac.com/gardening. Now that spring is here, officially it started on the 21st, so a couple days ago. You may be interested in putting in some new plants in your yard. This site has everything you need to know about gardening, which with detailed growing guides for fruits, vegetables, herbs, flowers, just about every other kind of plant. Well, we're going to be putting in an orange tree, though I don't think spring is the right time to do that, but I'm going to go over there and check it out. There's even a tool that will tell you when you should plant different vegetables based on your zip code. So clearly that's what I need to do. Head over to almanac.com/gardening. That's almanac.com/gardening. That's this hour's Bookmark This, brought to you by Anchor. You probably know that I use their dongles. They call them hubs. The Anchor 655 USB-C hub is an 8-in-1. It includes an SD card slot, micro SD card slot, two USB ports. Those are 10 gig ports, audio, Ethernet, and HDMI, all in one sleek little device. Comes in two different colors. Check out all that Anchor has to offer at OLTTV.com/anchor. That's OLTTV.com/anchor.
Online tonight.
Trying to figure out where the turkey bacon is on this pig. This is Online Tonight. Now, here's Max.
All right, don't know if you know, but today we are celebrating national, or I think it was yesterday, actually. Yesterday we were celebrating National Near Miss Day. National Near Miss Day is observed on the 23rd of March to commemorate a day in 1989 when the Earth narrowly avoided a collision with an asteroid. The asteroid was called the 4581 Acropolis. Gosh. Probably murdered that. On March 22nd through 23rd in 1989, the asteroid came within 500,000 miles of Earth, posing a significant threat. That seems like a long ways away. But it was a threat because it was big. So if it had gotten bigger, if it had veered off a little bit, it would have been bad. It would have been like a 600 megaton atomic bomb. So if it had hit us. So I'm glad it missed us. It was discovered by scientists on March 31st of 1989, 9 days after its closest approach to Earth. So it could have hit us before they had found out what it was. It's very scary in a way. The day encourages sharing stories of personal near misses and exploring information about asteroids, meteors, and meteorites. The activities are observed for National Near Miss Day, where you're supposed to share your stories. And you can then head over to the asteroid site on NASA's website, and you can read about other famous near misses, like Anne Hodges being struck by a meteorite and watching videos related to asteroids, meteors, and meteorites. Social media posts related to National Near Miss Day can use the hashtag National Near Miss Day. So there you go. Speaking of space, and I enjoy these things. I watched a movie about, you know, the women who were responsible for helping determine the trajectory of a spaceship. And then I also found out that Margaret Hamilton, a computer scientist, played a critical role in the Apollo 11 moon landing by writing software that guided Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin onto the moon's surface in 1969. She began her career at MIT in 1959, and she eventually led a software engineering division, and she helped the Defense Department for the U.S. military. Her work included pioneering asynchronous software, which allowed programs to handle multiple functions at the same time. And apparently she is the one who coined the word software engineer. Even though she had this groundbreaking contribution, she remained relatively unknown for decades until NASA formally recognized her achievements more than 30 years later. So that would be in 1999, apparently. They finally said, hey, if it wasn't for this lady, things would have been bad. So there you go. Other things that are interesting in history, tech in history. Actually, I have a cousin who has several patents in the laser space, and that would not have been possible had it not have been for the very first laser beam patent, which was issued in 1960. The first patent was issued by Arthur Leonard Schallow and Charles Hard Towns, who assigned it to Bell Telephone Laboratories. That is, when I was in telecom, that's primarily what we used lasers for, was to transport digital information. And at the beginning, it was used as umbilicals, which means between switches, to carry voice data. And then as the internet, of course, it exploded, we started to put a lot of things over fiber. And a laser is what drives the light down the line. In 1993... the first Pentiums shipped. Intel introduced the very first Pentium processors, and they had both a 60 and 66 megahertz speed, which was a much better processor than, say, the 486 line, which was an improvement on the 286 line, which was also an improvement on the 8088 line. Anyway, so these things keep evolving. The Pentium processor boasted over 3.1 million transistors and 4 gig of addressable memory. These were milestones in those days. This was impressive. This is where Intel started to change their naming type of thing. You see, 286, 386, and 486, you can't really trademark those. So they came out with the name Pentium so that they could get away from these numbers. And they could then protect their brand a little bit because they were getting some pressure from AMD, who was making x86 compatible processors and using similar numbers. And so they wanted to, be able to protect themselves. Intel wanted to protect themselves a little bit more. So in 1999, there was a court action that said you cannot copyright or trademark the term 386, and it was deemed generic. And so this is what kind of drove Intel to come out with the Pentium. Hey, don't forget to check out our merch over at olttv.com/store. We have clocks and tote bags and mugs and T-shirts. And, of course, I've got my dinosaur parody shirt there if you want to check it out. It's the shirt only. And head over to the website, onlinetonight.com. Each and every hour has a show note. It's got a link to the bookmark this. And, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast. We greatly appreciate it. Stay tuned.
Online Tonight is produced and copyrighted by Smart Family Media. All rights reserved. Host Maxwell Smart. Producer and other hats worn by Victoria Smart. Views and opinions expressed are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, affiliates, or other advertisers.